looks. It was a similar circumstance, I think, to the way the game was played in Long Island. Instead of finding a way to win, we found a way to lose. We made a couple of mistakes that ended up in the back of our net.
That's a good way to sum it up. For Mike Sullivan, Tim Benz here in the Pittsburgh CityCast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download the app today or go online to BetRivers.com. Here with you after a third straight Penguins defeat, a ninth in a row to a Metro Division foe, 4-2 to the New York Islanders at PPG Paints Arena last night. I know a lot of people who lost in that one twice. They lost thinking the Pens were going to win because Tristan Jarry was back in net. They lost because they thought the Pens were desperate and couldn't lose a ninth in a row to a divisional team. Desperate, and they couldn't lose three in a row to the Islanders twice and the Devils once without getting any points, but they did after going up in the game 2-1 after two periods. I know a lot of people who got in and bet it live with the Penguins winning and doubled down and lost. I stayed off of it because essentially those things that I just rattled off, the reasons why the Pens are slumping right now, I don't trust them. I don't trust to bet on them. I don't. Not with the way they're playing. Pens are plus 1,900 to win the East and plus 3,700 to win the Cup. I get the odds in the Cup being that long. I can't believe they're still getting that much of a puncher's chance in the East. At best, they qualify as a wild card. At best, and there's no way they beat either Carolina or Boston to get out of the first round. I expect the Pens to be heavy underdogs at home Thursday against Connor McDavid and the Oilers. They're struggling too, by the way, Edmonton having lost four in a row, but I still think the Pens will be underdogs. I think the over-under is going to be high in that one. Might be a good night to get good odds on the under, or maybe it'll be a really high line. You get good odds on the over if you just want to throw a few bucks down and root for lots of goals. We'll hear more about the Penguins in just a little bit with Brian Metzer of the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. I want to talk some college basketball first, though. Pitt still looking to get firm footing in the NCAA tournament, losing to Virginia Tech on Saturday. That didn't help. They're 12-point favorites tonight at home against Georgia Tech, and I think they'll cover. I'm looking for Pitt to win its next three games and win each of them big to attempt to impress voters in the polls and those who are on the selection committee. For fans of the Pitt Panthers basketball team, complaining about the poll voters has proven fruitless. Blaming flawed computer ranking models, or at least flawed interpretations of them, that's doing no good. Jeff Capel's attempt to take a jab at the ACC network for weak promotion on Monday, that was a new twist. We'll see how that one works. I mean, encouraging the further blurring of lines between what's sports journalism and what's public relations wouldn't exactly be the route that I would encourage, but Capel certainly has different priorities in front of him than I do. At this point, however, if the Panthers don't make the NCAA tournament, they should probably just end up blaming themselves. Let's face it, if Pitt wins three of its remaining four games, especially if one of those three is at number 13 Miami on March the 4th, the Panthers have to get a berth on Selection Sunday. If they don't, forget seeking blame, start an investigation. After all, if Pitt does win three of four to close out the regular season, even if one of those games isn't against Miami, that'd give the Panthers 22 victories, 15 in conference, and a double bye going into the ACC tournament. Pitt's other three games are at home against Georgia Tech Tuesday night, at home against Syracuse on Saturday, and at Notre Dame on March the 1st. Those three teams are a combined 14-34 in ACC play this season. Even if the Panthers should lose their first game in the ACC tournament, that worst-case scenario puts them at 22-10 overall in third place at 15-6 in the ACC. Now, in his latest bracketology post at CBS Sports, Jerry Palm had five ACC teams, Virginia, Miami, Duke, NC State, and Pitt in the tournament, with a sixth team, North Carolina, on the bubble as one of the first four out. Pitt was the last of that bunch to be included as the number 9 seed in the Midwest region. At ESPN.com, Joe Lenardi's most recent bracket from February the 17th prior to Pitt's loss to the Hokies on Saturday, that included seven ACC teams, the six I just mentioned, and Clemson. Pitt was forecast as a 9 seed by Lenardi there as well. Now, if Pitt can't get in as a second or third place team with a 15-6 or 16-6 conference record, that's if they win at least one conference tournament game or sweep the rest of the regular season, if they can't get in then, as a second or third place team at a 15-6 or 16-6 mark, then there's just an intellectual disconnect taking place. Either Pitt will be deserving of a bid, and it would be a criminal oversight if they don't get one, or the ACC simply shouldn't be worthy of consideration for 5 to 7 bids at this stage of the regular season. Period. It's got to be one or the other. Now, to be fair, at least Palm is consistent. He doesn't have Virginia listed as a lock even to make the tournament yet. That's despite the Cavaliers being 21-4 and ranked 6th in the country. For a 15-team conference such as the ACC, it does seem a bit thin to just potentially have 5 teams in the bracket, especially with the league's history and reputation. I suppose that's why pollsters and committee members are leaning more and more toward the computer formulas and analytics in recent years to determine seedings and rankings. In terms of creating the bracket, though, apparently that just doesn't mean much now, nor does Pitt's 29-point win over Northwestern, who's a projected 6th seed, or victories against Miami and Virginia. So I get why Pitt fans are frustrated. It's not just a matter of wanting to be more secure in the field of 68 that's the case right now. It's also about seeding. In Palm's bracket, for instance, Duke is a 6th seed and gets 11th-seeded Boise State in the first round. Virginia is a 3-seed and gets a 14th Yale team. And a 5th-seeded Miami draws number 12, Charleston. Pitt gets perennial Big Ten power Michigan State in an 8-9 game. So how does that sit? All the Panthers need to do to validate their cause moving forward is win. If they do that in each of the next 3 games, maybe 4 out of 5, then if they get screwed over, start playing the blame game. And maybe aim a little bit higher than the ACC network, like Capel did. You can still get Pitt at plus 550 to win the ACC championship at Bet Rivers. They're plus 4,000 to make the Final Four, and they're plus 12,500 to win the whole thing. So if you believe in Pitt, you can definitely put your money where your mouth is and still get a decent payoff. All right, let's get back to hockey now and hear from Brian Metzer of the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. Mets joined me on the Breakfast with Bens podcast to talk hockey, and there's plenty to talk about after last night's loss to the Islanders. Let's start with the goaltending. Let's start with Jari's comeback. I thought a lot of good early and too much bad late. How about you?
I'm completely right there with you, Tim. It was a really nice return for him through 2 periods. I thought that he was making the kind of big game-saving saves that have been absent from the lineup while he has been out for the 9 that he missed, and even before that when he was out. So that was really refreshing to see. But unfortunately, for as much good as he did, he was pretty much solely responsible for helping them lose the game. He let up a bit of a leaky goal to Bo Horvat, and then the giveaway to the Islanders was very reminiscent of what he did in the playoffs a few years ago. So I don't know if it was just mental rust, a little bit of fatigue maybe from not having played, but he, in his postgame comments, tried to say that, you know, they made a read and it didn't work out. I think it was a bit of the old ace that John Madden pulled back in the playoffs years ago against Mario Lemieux when he was with the Devils and got the big guy to drop a pass to him, because that's what it looked like to me as Jari just completely gave the puck away and it ended up in the back of the net. So good and then very, very, very bad at the end of the game.
Yeah, when I asked him about the shot that got him from Bo Horvat, initially, you know, he was asked about that shot by Seth Rohrbaugh, my colleague over here at the Trib, and he said, yeah, it got me high. Or up high. It didn't get him high. Maybe it did get him high. I don't know. But he said it got him up high, and I followed up, and I said, yeah, did it get you in the collarbone? And got kind of snippy. But, I mean, listen, Tristan, if you're going to get upset about details when it comes to injuries, man, you've been out for 3 weeks or a month now with what was called an upper body injury, and now we're hearing it's a hip. So pardon me for trying to get specific about your injuries, you know?
You know what, Tim? I heard him when we played that on the post game, and he's like, I already answered that, or whatever he said.
And, no, he didn't.
It was like kind of annoying, and maybe the welt on your neck needs addressed, because it immediately went from just pinkish to dark, and that's
I couldn't see it because I was on the far side.
Well, they kept showing it like while we were sitting up in the press box, and I kept seeing it on a replay, and as they showed close-ups of him, you could see his neck kind of discoloring, and for me, if they were saying upper body injury before, I know he has this hip supposedly. I mean, that's in the national narrative now with this chronic hip issue, which is problematic for a guy his age. That's something that could linger if that is the truth. But to take a shot there, would you be completely shocked if come Thursday they're like, hey, Casey DeSmith, you're back out there. And that would just kind of sum up the season for Tristan Jarry, which hasn't gone all that well in terms of being a contract year. When he's played, he's been pretty good. But it's just keeping – it's not his ability so much as his availability at this point.
Yeah, one hand washes the other there. And I don't know how they invest in him for the future. I think they need a new goaltender for next year.
I can't disagree. I mean, when you look at this spot, this is going to be yet another season, assuming they even can squeak into the playoffs, because right now we should mention on the outside looking in after the Florida Panthers won yesterday afternoon to jump into the wild card. And then, of course, the Islanders, by virtue of the victory – jumped themselves over the Penguins, so they're now on the outside looking in. But if they do get into the playoffs, you could honestly say that a big reason for them being dispatched by either the Boston Bruins or Carolina Hurricanes, because that's who it would likely be, could be tied to their goaltending as much as anything else, which has been the case going back year after year after year. Last year, Louis Domingue couldn't get it done. Then the year prior to that, Tristan Jarry wasn't able to get it done. Then it was a combo of Matt Murray and Tristan Jarry not able to outduel Carey Price, and then Matt Murray lost four straight to the Islanders before that. And then right before that, he couldn't beat Braden Holtby in what may have been a de facto Stanley Cup, because many people in 18 still believe if the Penguins got past the Caps, they would have been the ones to run off to a Stanley Cup for their third straight year. And really, it's all their inability to get a goaltender that can make big saves in big moments, as they got back in 16 and 17 whenever they won back-to-back Stanley Cups.
Brian Metzer, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. I thought the most telling quote was Mike Sullivan after the game, where he said, "We're not finding ways to win, we're finding ways to lose."
Can you disagree with him? I mean, this is what his team is doing right now. And for him, you know, he's so detail oriented, and he tries to run a pretty tight ship. And this has to be the loosest Penguins team in terms of defensive zone coverage that I've seen in years. Almost probably all the teams that he's coached. I mean, this is the worst defensive team that I think he's had. The goaltending is under siege most nights, which doesn't do any favors whenever they can't make big saves. They sometimes have four and five guys back to make plays in the zone whenever there is an offensive rush for the opponent, and they're not able to come up with a stop. They just kind of stand around and puck watch and let the goal be scored. So I he's got to be tearing his hair out, because he gets two quality periods, has a 2-1 lead. I can you recall a Penguins team under Mike Sullivan losing as many games from ahead as they have this year? They've blown more leads than I can remember.
Yes, and that was, I think, the most glaring issue yesterday, because when Jarry came back, initially I looked at his return, and right away I'm seeing, okay, he stops a breakaway with a blocker save a few moments after a goal is scored. That's been a problem for the Penguins. Yep. They didn't give up an early goal in the first few minutes of the first period, which has been a problem for the Penguins. There was that wild flurry at the end of a period. I believe it was the second period, right in front of his crease, and he didn't allow anything past him there. So I'm like, all right, a lot of these issues that have been prevalent for the Penguins still exist, but at least the goalie is there to deflect them. And then the blown lead in the third period was just something that had to rear its head.
It just was so deflating for the building. I mean, the place was electric after the melee, Tim. I mean, I don't know that I've experienced, and it wasn't a full house as it hasn't been often this season, but I was just, everybody was so excited, it seemed, from seeing this just dust up of every player on the ice trying to kill one another. That Johnston guy, I think, was trying to drive Evgeny Malkin's head into the ice. He was ready to just lay another big hammer down on him before he was like a Night of the Living Dead zombie feeding on Gino as he straddled him. And he saw Jason Zucker and he decided he'd rather take a bite out of him. It was just a crazy scenario that got the building just so lathered up. And then they found a way to have that completely deflate everything. All the energy you built there was completely lost with a couple bonehead plays. And honestly, I think this Penguins team has a couple bonehead plays in them every single night. And to the point you just made, I was right there with you. I thought Jarry, okay, he looks like he's going to be able to be the guy to be the difference when those bonehead mistakes happen. And then he went out and made a couple egregious ones of his own, which end up being the difference in the hockey game. So when you see that kind of thing, can we realistically look at the Penguins and say, yeah, they're going to make a run at a Stanley Cup this year. Yeah, they can still get into the wild card, but that's kind of like a lamb to slaughter. I mean, you're going up either against one of the historic run of the Boston Bruins or the Carolina Hurricanes. Both teams really have had the Penguins number going back seasons now. So I don't think it's a recipe for any kind of success this year. And that's why I'm kind of wondering what exactly they're going to do two Fridays from now when the trade deadline hits.
At the time of our recording, Mets, you mentioned the crowds. There's still tickets available for Connor McDavid coming to town this week, right?
Isn't that funny? I mean, just to think you can get tickets to see that marquee matchup, because for me, you know what? You're still getting a chance to see two generational talents go head to head. Sidney Crosby having one of his best seasons in recent memory, and he's had a number of really good seasons recently, but he's at 68 points in 56 games. He's almost a point per game, even strength point guy. He has 51 even strength points in 56 games, which is just remarkable for a player his age. Going up against Connor McDavid, who is having an outstanding season, you think that alone would sell tickets? Having Leon, Connor, Evgeny Malkin, Sidney Crosby, Ricard Raquel, and Jake Gensel have been entertaining to watch. I mean, there's a lot of star power on display, and I just think people here, when you combine what's going on the ice with what is going on outside around the building, people are just so frustrated trying to get there night in and night out. They're like, you know what? Connor's not even a big enough draw for us to buy tickets and spend all that it takes to bring the family down there to get some food and some drinks and some tickets, where you could be dropping, you know, $500-$600 for, depending on the size of your family.
McDavid is now at 102 points. He's 20 points ahead of second place, and that's Draisaitl.
Isn't that funny? And you know what's wild to me is that even with that happening, I still don't think Edmonton is going to win the Stanley Cup this year. That's what's funny. And that is why at some point I still think Connor McDavid, if they don't get over a hump here soon, is going to be an ask for a trade type of guy, Tim, because eventually he's going to get frustrated and he's going to say, look, I know we score tons of points, we can roll up all the goals, but the last handful of playoffs, they eventually run into a team that knows and has the elixir to shut him and Leon down, and then they have no answer because their goaltending has faltered, which it looks like could happen again this year. Their defense falters, and they can't score their way out of a situation. But, boy, it's fun to watch those guys roll up the points in the regular season, which they often do.
Well, you said that they're not going to win the Stanley Cup. I don't even know if they're going to make the playoffs. I mean, they're in a wild card position right now at 68 points, and they've lost four in a row. They're five clear of the Flames as we're taping up right now, but that could be overcome. I don't think they're winning the Cup, and I'm not even securing them making a wild card slot, probably, but I'm not going to say it's an absolute.
You know what? If Calgary finds a way to start getting their goaltending in order, I mean, Markstrom's not had that great a year, but Dan Vladar looks like he could be kind of laying claim to that job. They could get themselves into that wild card, just like you mentioned. And I know Nashville's 10 points back, but they've got games in hand on all the teams ahead of them. They've played just 54 games. The Flames 57, Minnesota 56, and Edmonton 57. So with those games in hand, I think Nashville could even have a say in what goes on over there. So it's going to be an interesting couple weeks here as we watch the teams come down the stretch. But I think that's an excellent point by you. Edmonton may not even get themselves in, which is even worse than flaming out in the playoffs when you have that kind of star power up top.
The one guy that's keeping up with McDavid, at least in terms of goal scoring, is Pastrnak. He had two more on Monday, and the Bruins are just filthy. Is it their cup to lose, do you think?
On paper right now, yes. I feel that way. Boston just, they're already at 91 points, which is just insane. They never lose. They've only lost eight games this season. They've lost two games on home ice. Just five games have gone beyond regulation. I know they lost a couple in the overtime or shootout, but when you look at a team like that that is so dominant on home ice and they're going to have home ice advantage throughout the playoffs no matter who they play, it's hard to say that anyone's going to beat them. However, just a handful of years ago, the Tampa Bay Lightning had a run like this.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Is that the analogy to draw here?
Yeah, and they were essentially swept out of the playoffs by a team that had no business beating them. So, you know, anything can happen. That's what kind of, I think, is entertaining about the first round of the NHL playoffs, that anything can and usually does happen. But that said, this Boston team from top to bottom, Tim, and they're still looking to add. if they add a couple more pieces at the deadline. I mean, you got to be careful because we've seen teams like this add pieces and then kind of screw up their situation. However, I've heard a lot of the stars there pretty much saying, we want to add, let us add a couple pieces. They've been rumored to be involved with Jacob Chychrun. They've been rumored to be involved with Gavrikov from Columbus, who would be a great addition to their bottom pair on D. So anything can happen there. They got two really quality goaltenders. They've got an outstanding defense. If they add, I think they're even more dangerous, and they're going to have 100 points before the end of the week, probably.
Last thing, Mets, as far as the wild card race goes for the Penguins, they got vaulted by both the Islanders and the Panthers. Those are the two teams I've been watching this whole time. I just felt like the Islanders were always going to get better. I felt like the Panthers were always going to get better. I did think that the Capitals were going to have some trouble as the season went along, like the Penguins did. I've always waited for the Devils to fall. That's just not going to happen to the point that they're out of it now, I guess. I still think the Sabres and Red Wings are a year away. I'm not as worried as I am about them catching up as I am the Penguins keeping pace with Florida and New York to get in. I guess one thing I should caveat, though, when it comes to the Islanders, they've already played the Penguins now twice, so I guess the Hall of Fame pace for Anders Lee and Brock Nelson will just have to fade by force. What is it with those guys? I mean, like, they're Gretzky and Lemieux every time they play the Penguins.
My God, Tim, Brock Nelson has, I think, he's almost at a point per game against the Penguins in his career. I think he's played them 37 times, and he has 33 points. He's averaging like 0.88 points per game when he goes up against them. Anders Lee also seemingly gets on the board every single time that they play, and they were the difference makers whenever they beat the Penguins in the playoffs, too, a handful of years ago. It was those guys taking care of business, so it's funny to watch how certain guys just own certain teams. And they should mention that's the most points that Brock Nelson has against any. That was a Freudian slip. Brock McGinn doesn't have many points against anybody. Brock Nelson has against any other team in the league. I mean, I think he has a better scoring rate against the Arizona Coyotes, but he's only played them like 16 or 17 times. But the 33 points against the Penguins is a high watermark against any team in the league. Now, that's a team that I think is heating up at the right time. I know they've still not won enough recently. They lost over the weekend some big games that could have really hurt them, but the Penguins didn't take advantage of that. So they now have gone 6-2-2 in their last 10. They beat the Penguins 2 out of the last 3 games that they played. And I feel like with Horvat being there, if they can get healthy, which is a big key, having a goaltender like Ilya Sorokin, I mean, the kid was outstanding last night. He was as big
that
a difference in the game.
That paddle save on Letang was unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, that one was just a thing of beauty. And he made a couple of really quality leg saves on Evgeny Malkin in the game, too, that could have been difference-making goals had Gino been able to score. So when you have a guy that plays at that level, if they get Barzal back and they get Pageau back and they have that murderer's row down the middle that we talked about a week or so ago, where you can have a Horvat, you can have a Pageau, Cizikas, Barzal can go to the middle. I mean, it's a really, really deep hockey team in terms of what they've been able to do. And if they can get healthy, I think that they will be able to hold off the Penguins and the Florida Panthers and everybody else that they need to. One thing on the Caps I want to throw at you, they have a couple games in hand on both Florida and the Islanders, who are in the wild card at this moment. And Alex Ovechkin hasn't played a number of games now due to being out of town for his father passing away. He'll be back. And you know, if anybody can rally around something, it's a guy like Ovi, and they could use the death of his father as the thing to get them to kind of will themselves up into the wild card. So that's something to watch once he gets back in the lineup, which could be happening any day now.
Well, we all saw what happened with Martin St. Louis' mother. So I know what you're onto there.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. You know, unfortunately, something like that can overcome even a 3-0, 3-1 type situation in a playoff series.
Mets, I'm doing some crowdsourcing here. What time do you generally have to be at the arena, and what time are you leaving your house to get there?
I usually leave it depends where I'm coming from, but if I'm leaving
7 o'clock game.
Yeah, if I'm leaving home, I leave probably 5:15, 5:30, and I'm usually pulling into my parking spot at 6-ish, 6:15 at the latest, and it used to be a 20-minute drive total, no matter what. Now it takes me about 20 minutes to get from the end of the Veterans Bridge to my parking spot. So the traffic down there has been a nightmare. And nobody knows where they're going. It's rookie night every night now, because it's even veteran drivers that go there all the time, like us, Tim, it's rookie night for us too.
You don't know what's you don't know what's closed down.
It's different every night. Yeah, it's different every night. And you know what's really been agitating is when I leave the arena, which is typically after everyone else has been gone already, and I go to pull. I usually park in the lot across the street at the Marriott at the Chatham Center there, and I turn up the hill to shoot across and go to 279. They usually have the crossroad in between the old arena site and where the old in the old parking lot. They have that closed, and you have to go all the way down to Grant Street to get to 279 now.
it's an absolute mess, and now they're closing down the Armstrong Tunnel start in early March inbound. So,
which is a nightmare.
I'm sure that'll make everything better. Okay, Mets, I appreciate it. We'll talk again. Maybe we'll just do the next podcast by phone the day after the next game while we're still in traffic. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, we may have to listen to whoever's able to make it to the arena do a game broadcast, and we can kind of have it on while we're stuck in our cars.
All right, so my thanks to Mets. Appreciate him stopping by, and you can hear Mets every week at the Breakfast with Benz podcast over at Trib Live. Tomorrow on Breakfast with Benz, we'll look at Duquesne. They are going on the road to play LaSalle. What a crazy game that was for Duquesne last time out against St. Louis. If you missed the box score on that one, the Billikens outscored the Dukes 70-20 in the paint, while the Dukes outscored St. Louis 45-3 when it came to three-pointers. I'm not sure if I've seen disparity like that in two directions like that in one game in a long time. I think there'll be some points scored in that one. Check the over-under between the Dukes and LaSalle. That's the next opponent for Duquesne on Wednesday night. And see if the over-under is enticing to you to go over in that one. But I feel like some points will be scored there between those two teams. Duquesne is now still in the hunt for a double bye in the A-10 tournament, even though they lost that game to St. Louis. We'll see how that goes for them. They've got a couple more games at home before everything wraps up. They've still got to play against the Davidson Wildcats on Sunday. And then they get a game against UMass on Wednesday of next week. I'll be on the call for that game against the Minutemen. Okay, that'll do it for this week. You're in the Pittsburgh CityCast. Back with more next week. We'll look ahead to that game for Duquesne. We'll catch you up on where Pitt sits. We'll also give you the latest on the Penguins. And by that point, we'll be knee-deep in trade deadline talk, if there's any to be had for the Pens. It'll be coming up a week from Friday. So we'll preview all of that, not only here, but also on Breakfast with Benz. Got some Steelers content up there as well, if you want to check that out. This is the Pittsburgh CityCast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download the app today or go to BetRivers.com.
Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh CityCast on the Bet Rivers Network.